ancient books of war.
When I was little, my father was famous. He was the greatest samurai in the empire. And he was the shogun's decapitator. He cut off the heads of 131 lords. It was a bad time for the empire. The shogun just stayed inside his castle, and he never came out. People said his brain was infected by devils. My father would come home. He would forget about the killings. He wasn't scared of the shogun, but the shogun was scared of him. Maybe that was the problem. Then, one night, the shogun sent his ninja spies to our house. They were supposed to kill my father, but they didn't. That was the night everything changed.
AOR, our leadership and troops, as you would expect, doing a fantastic job. 2 days ago, under the direction and direct orders of President Donald J. Trump, the Department of War launched Operation Epic Fury, the most lethal, most complex, and most precise aerial operation in history. For 47 long years, the expansionist and Islamist regime in Tehran has waged a savage, one-sided war against America. They didn't always declare it openly, except for their constant chants of death to America. They did it through the blood of our people. Car bombs in Beirut.
Iran's Revolutionary Guard naval forces will carry out live fire exercises in the Strait of Hormuz on February 1st and February 2nd, Press TV reported on Thursday, according to Reuters. The announcement comes amid elevated tensions between Washington and Tehran, with both sides positioning military capabilities in the region. The Strait is the world's most vital oil export route, which connects the biggest Gulf oil producers.
She came to the shores of America, the sky that's a pillar, the alpha and omega, the home of the beggars, the black settlers, who've been beaten, raped, lynched, robbed, and stoned, and called the home the earth for service that they couldn't maintain at home. This dates back to 1555, when they captured the first tribe of men, and piled them in a pen, 50 feet high, and took them all on a 9,000-mile ride. And landed on the shore of a place they'd never seen before. We read about this inside the ancient books of war. Bondage and stainless steel stripped of their language. Still survived the anguish of slavery, but still remain nameless. Separated to portions and tricked by John Hardy Hawkins. And sold on the auction, taught birth control and abortion. Rulers of the first part became slaves of the worst part. The devil's curse God and reverse God. It turned God the dog and made people search hard. No relief came to the prophet, a deadly farad. Short trauma, dropped our mamas off in Bahamas and Barbados. Tobago's separated us from slave boats. Made our own brothers hate us. From Virgin Isles to Jamaica, Trinidad, Honduras, Haiti, Grenada, Bermuda to Cayman, meant to enslavement, enslavement, enslavement.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome back to the show. It's your host, Danny Haifong. I'm joined by former UN Marine Corps officer and U.S. Marine Corps intelligence officer and UN weapons inspector, Scott Ritter. Thanks so much for joining me again today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, it's always great to be on with you, Scott. Hit the like button, everyone. That helps boost the show in YouTube's algorithm. And we're just going to get started, Scott. So I wanted your assessment of how this war is going. I know on previous shows you have said that the U.S. and Israel will soon become defenseless as this war goes on. The New York Times published an article announcing the 7th U.S. death that we know of in this war. And I just wanted to pull up a quote here that the New York Times wrote when they're talking about this. They said, for the U.S., the grim toll in the first week of this war signaled that Iran was more prepared for war than the Trump administration anticipated, U.S. military officials told the Times. Iran has continued to put up a fight even after Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, its supreme leader, and other top officials were killed by Israeli attacks with intel help from the CIA. Iran has vowed after oil depot attacks, Scott, to increase its retaliatory strikes by 100% for missiles, I believe 20% for drones. We're seeing the results of that. I can pull up some images, but really we're seeing Bahrain energy being hit. We're seeing Israel, Tel Aviv taking a pounding over the last 2 days, especially. So maybe you can give your assessment of where this war is at and how you see it going for all sides.
Well, let's there's an American military officer named Colonel John Boyd. People might want to look him up. His thinking, his philosophies have been adopted by the military, by civilians alike. He is the man who came up with the concept of getting inside your enemy's decision-making cycle. And what he used to describe is something called the OODA loop. OODA is an abbreviation for observe, orient, decide, act. These are the four phases in decision making. You observe, you then orient on what it is you're focused on. You make a decision about what needs to be done, and then you do that decision. And the side that can do this the fastest tends to win. He did it as a fighter pilot, you know. So basically, if two airplanes are coming in, the one initiates, the other one reacts, and he claimed that he could get into a kill position quicker because he could cycle information more quickly than his opponent. His goal was to have the other side reacting to you. Now, the United States and Israel carried out a surprise attack against Iran, one that included the murder, assassination of Ali Khamenei. One would think, therefore, that they've reacted and now the Iranians have to react. But this wasn't the case because we hadn't prepared properly. We had, goals that were linked to, things that could never happen. You can't say you're going to have regime change by killing Ali Khamenei. The reality is by killing Ali Khamenei, not just killing, murdering Ali Khamenei, you make regime change impossible. Now, anybody who knew anything about Iran would know that that's the case. If you know about just, how revered the supreme leader is amongst the faithful, and Iran is a nation of faithful. And if you knew about the constitution, Iran is a constitutional republic. In fact, Iran is the most effectively functioning democracy in the Middle East. I'll say that again, and I'll be more than happy to take anybody on in a debate on this at any time. Iran functions more effectively as a democracy than any other nation in the Middle East, including Israel. It's a constitutional republic. It's an Islamic republic. But they have mechanisms in place. They have institutions in place that filled the gap created by the death of Ali Khamenei. And they ensured that the regime continued to function. And the murder of Ali Khamenei, made sure that the people would rally around the government. So right off the bat, this was a regime change war. The purpose of the surprise attack was to achieve regime change by facilitating the murder of the man that we all believed death would bring the collapse of Iran. And it turned out to be the opposite. I've said this here and I've said it before. We lost the war with the first missiles fired into Iran because we don't know what we were doing. We initiated something that that was supposed to achieve a certain result, but achieved the exact opposite result. We defeated ourselves from day one. But more importantly, and we admit it now, we didn't anticipate the Iranian response. We thought by killing Ali Khamenei, Iran would be leadership. It'd be like a ship with no captain at the wheel, the ship just spinning around. That wasn't the case. Iran had a plan, and they immediately implemented the plan, and the plan blew our minds because we didn't think they were going to do this. We didn't think. We thought maybe they'd strike Israel, maybe they'd strike America. They struck everything. They did full broad spectrum strike. And so we initiated something, juked, and the Iranians flipped over, and we went, damn, they're on our six. Now the Iranians are driving this ship because we're playing reaction. The Iranians are implementing a plan that they have thought out from the start. They have prepared for it. They have the resources for it. And they're implementing this plan without deviation. The United States, on the other hand, has changed its plan 5 times in 10 days. And we're going to change it again today because there's a new economic reality coming to play, which we didn't anticipate. We didn't anticipate any of this.
Which is wild to me, but continue. Yeah.
It's the most poorly planned military operation in the history of poorly planned military operations. Meanwhile, the Iranians are executing a plan to perfection. To perfection. All you naysayers out there, I mean, I love the neocons. First of all, I love fat neocons who've never served in the military. They're my favorite people because they just sit there and they talk about things they don't understand. And they say, you just wait. We're going to get a culmination of forces that are going to sequence together and achieve a result that's going to collapse the regime from within. Trump is a genius. He's a 5D chess player. And you guys don't understand it. Just because it looks bad right now doesn't mean it's bad. That's fake. We're going to get under there. We're going to undermine. It's going to collapse. We're going to win because we are the lethal fielders. Pete Hesh has told us so. They're just morons. They don't know anything about war. They don't know anything about geopolitics. And perhaps more importantly, they don't know anything about Iran. We have people talking about Iran who don't know anything about Iran. We have people talking about war who don't know anything about war. And yet we have a mainstream media that gives echo chamber status to these people. They can sit there and talk and talk and talk, get social media, you know, broadcasts and everything. And the stupid American people, I'm sorry, but you are stupid, every single one of you, with the possible exception of a handful of people who are watching your show today. But the rest of them are coming. I look out at my neighborhood. It is just a quiet little sleepy suburban neighborhood outside of Albany, New York. No one's panicking. They don't understand what's happening. They don't comprehend. You can walk the neighborhood and you see, you know, about 30% I stand with Israel signs, dating back, of course, to the genocide against the people of Palestine. But these are ignorant people, stupid people, who just live their lives insulated from the reality of what's happening. And they only believe the crap that they're given on TV. And yet, this morning they got a little bit of a wake-up call because it's Monday. And I know on Friday the gas was $3.11 a gallon when I filled up my tank. And today it's $3.41 a gallon. It's gone up 30 cents. And by the end of the day, it's going to go up another nickel. And by the end of the week, who knows where it's going to be, because the price of Brent crude is going through the roof. Why? We didn't anticipate that either. No matter how much our military told us, we will secure the Strait of Hormuz. There's no way Iran could shut it down. Iran shut it down. There's not a damn thing we can do about it. Qatar's no longer producing gas. Kuwait's no longer producing oil.
Saudi's reducing
producing oil because not because they wanted to stop, because Iran made them stop.
Because of this. This is BAMCO in Bahrain. Yeah. I mean, continue.
And the United Arab Emirates is about to be shut down. Saudi Arabia is on the verge of being shut down. Baku is going to stop its ability to be able to produce oil if they play stupid games. And this is it. And the world's going to have an energy crash. We've been talking about it. We've been saying it's going to happen. You know, and there are the really genius Americans out there. That's not going to happen. We're energy sufficient. We're America. We got Texas. They frack things. They break the soil open and they get gas out of there. And we're energy sufficient. We're not affected. And then we invaded Venezuela. We got all their oil. We're good to go. And ask yourselves why you're paying through the nose of the gas pump if we're so damn energy sufficient. Ask yourself where the strategic petroleum reserves are. Donald Trump didn't load them up, guys. They're empty. They don't exist. We're screwed. But that's okay. I think it's time the American people pay a price. We are, but we've lost this war. This war is lost. The Iranians were smarter than us about ballistic missile defense. If you don't mind, I'll give you a quick 5-minute lesson on ballistic missile defense for the stupid people that aren't listening, because everybody listening here is very smart and very attuned and very, but sometimes people will watch the show later on who are stupid. So this is for their benefit. If you take missile defense, understand that every component of the missile defense shield that we've put together over Israel and the Middle East wasn't designed to work with the other. They were designed in a vacuum. Some of them, like the Patriot missile, date back to the original missile defense shield technology, Sentinel technology of the 1970s. And when Raytheon was asked to build a tactical system for the U.S. Army, rather than doing the right thing, which is to design it from scratch, they took the shortcut. And they took 1970s technology and they tried to adapt it and modify it for tactical application. And the Patriot system has never worked properly since then. So, yes, the Patriot doesn't work. It never has. And it never will, because we're always playing catch up. When you have to keep putting in, you know, program updates to fix it, that means you're updating against a threat that already exists that proves that it's capable of defeating it. By the time you update it, there's a new threat that you can't meet. And we're seeing that play out in the skies over the Middle East. The Patriot system doesn't work. Iron Dome isn't designed for this. David Sling and Arrow 3, likewise. What you're seeing are systems that are designed to fight. They were designed to fight against a specific missile threat. That means a standard ballistic missile on a ballistic missile trajectory flying at certain speeds. The Iranians, on the other hand, are firing missiles that aren't firing a ballistic missile trajectory. They have the ability to accelerate mid-course. They have the ability to maneuver. And so as these systems seek to acquire something, you might notice that missiles launched are sort of an S-shaped curve to them. That's them adjusting. The radars are queuing in, and they're anticipating a point of intercept. So as the missile travels, the missile's launched, and then it makes the adjustment to get to the point of intercept. But the problem is that point of intercept, once the missile launches, changes because the Iranian missile accelerates. So now this missile's trying to play catch-up, and you'll see that big curve. It's just trying to catch up, but it can't. And then it maneuvers. Let's say it gets in and gets an intercept point. Then it maneuvers, and it can't maneuver, and it misses every single time because the Iranians have built a system to defeat this. Now, we've overlaid enough architecture, though, with enough layers that on occasion we successfully intercept an old missile. And everybody goes, yay, aren't we the greatest? Now, what the Iranians have done, though, is they recognize that this is like building a car and getting, we're going to get a Porsche, a BMW, a Chevy, a Nissan, and we're going to put all these parts together and call it a car. And yet it's not going to work because they're not designed to function with one another. That's what we built with missile defense. But we have, we fooled ourselves because we have created early detection. The early detection is designed to give us as much advance notice as possible. So what happens is this early detection, let's call it a radar system in Qatar. I don't know, maybe it cost $1.1 billion. Let's just throw that out there. And so the missile launches, this early detection picks it up and starts grabbing as much data as possible and then communicating that data from satellite relay stations. You might see those little radar domes out there. And it communicates back so that our systems can fine tune. Rather than scanning the sky, we enable now systems to focus in on a predicted path of, and we get depth of data collection that gives us more time to launch and respond. And so on occasion, they actually hit something. So what the Iranians have done is they've saturated the skies, they've collected the data points, and then they've taken our eyes out. They blow up all of the radars used to collect data early on. Then they blow up all of the communication links. And so now we have a system that can't work because it wasn't designed to work. And the only way we made it work is by putting these eyes out in front of us and communication back, full spectrum dominance, we call it. And the Iranians have blinded us and made us unable to speak. And so the system has totally broken down right now. We are looking at complete system dysfunction. The missile defense system that we put over Israel doesn't work. It can't work. It won't work because it's all blinded. But enter the Turks. You see, the Turks now, they have two facilities. They have one in Pirinçlik near Diyarbakir. They have another one, I think, is Kirinjik, also near Diyarbakir. The Pirinçlik facility is an old Cold War era facility used to track satellites. In 1997, we turned it over to the Turks. The Turks may or may not have kept it operational. I don't know. But it is capable of doing detection. Why? How do I know? Because in the Gulf War, we, the United States, used it to detect Iraqi missile launches to provide Israel with the detection of launch, time of flight, and possible impact. And so it was a valuable system. That system still could be used today to track the Iranian missile launches. Then there's the one in Kirinjik. This is a big X-band radar affiliated with the THAAD system. It's linked supposedly to feed data to Mark 41 Aegis Ashore missile defense systems in Poland and Romania. But now it's been repurposed. And because they have no more target acquisition, because the Iranians have taken out all the radars in the Middle East, the Turkish radars are now collecting the data and feeding them into the system. So you may ask yourself, why would Iran attack Turkey? Because Turkey's providing targeting data to the ballistic missile defense shield. And so Iran wants to basically make a note. Turkey is not an innocent party in this conflict. Turkey is an active participant in this conflict. And they're repurposing NATO facilities for America's use. This is not a NATO war. NATO is not participating in this war. Any nations that participate do so on an individual basis. So Turkey can't say this is a NATO function, therefore we're just fulfilling our NATO obligations. Turkey has become an active participant in this conflict. But the bottom line is our missiles defense system doesn't work. Moreover, if it ever did work, that's when we had PAC-3 missiles, the more advanced version of the Patriot interceptors. We don't have any more. They're all gone. We're firing PAC-2s. PAC-2s don't work. Never did. Never will. But that's all we have left. So now the way we make up for the lack of PAC-3s is we do more salvo firing of PAC-2s. You might have seen that recently where there's a lot of missiles going up. No longer contained. We are just blowing out PAC-2s because we're trying to intercept things that they can't. The Iranian missiles are too fast, too maneuverable, and they'll never be intercepted by a PAC-2. So we're burning through the PAC-2s. And when we run out of PAC-2s, we ain't got nothing left. There is literally nothing left. The THAAD missiles that we have are very expensive. We've probably blown through about 80, 90% of our inventory. And what we have left won't work because all the radars are destroyed. You know, they're linked to that X-band radar. There are about five of them. Five have been killed. There's none left except the one in Turkey, which the Iranians will probably end up destroying. The Israelis are out of ammunition. They don't have anything. What we gave, they fired. Israel doesn't have its own. Just so you guys know, they don't produce the missiles. We do. when Iron Dome ran out of interceptor missiles during their fight with Hezbollah and all that, it was American military aircraft flying in from Europe. They were bringing stockpiles of interceptor missiles that we had stockpiled here because we make them. Israel doesn't make anything. We make them, and we don't make enough, and there's none left. And it's game, set, match. Guess who's not running out of missiles? Iran. Iran has sufficient missiles to last about 6 months of sustained activity, maybe even longer. They have enough drones to last for about a year and a half of sustained launch capability. Iran has planned for this war for 20 years. Iran is operating on a game plan. Iran is inside our decision-making cycle. Iran is executing the OODA loop more effectively, more efficiently than the United States and Israel. Iran will win this war.
Yeah, well, those are all really important points, Scott. And I'll just pull up some images of what you're talking about. Here's one of those THAAD radars that was destroyed in Jordan. There's satellite imagery of that. But also the situation in Israel. How much, Scott, will the situation in Israel influence the trajectory of this war? Because we're having people in Israel, this is someone who lives there, talking about being in darkness, the electricity is out. They're getting hit non-stop by Iranian missiles and drones. The 12-day war ended with Israel coming to the United States saying this has to stop. What makes this different? I mean, we're seeing the images of Tel Aviv. They're trying hard to censor it, but the last two nights in particular have been particularly difficult for Israel. How much will this affect things in the coming days?
Excuse me, Danny. I just got to wipe my eyes. I was crying for Israel. I mean, when she sent that to tweet out.
I should pull up the comments because it's actually really, your sentiment is very much shared by a lot of people, as you can see. You poor thing. Yeah. Oh, let's play on the smallest violin. I mean, we can go on and on.
No one literally cares. The Israelis mocked the Palestinians, mocked the suffering, mocked the genocide, denied the genocide, denied the suffering. And frankly speaking, what Iran is doing to Israel right now doesn't even come close to what Israel did to the people of Gaza. You know, the worst is yet to come. So if we're going to, you know, you want us to cry because Iran took out a power facility after you bombed oil facilities outside of Tehran, causing acid rain and oil rain to rain down, causing the sewers to explode in fire, causing rivers of fire to break through the Iranian cities, causing literally hell to break out in the streets of Tehran, a capital city of one of the major powers in the region. You want us to cry because you lost electricity? No. And I don't know if you saw, but Benjamin Netanyahu's residence was hit last night and Ben Gvir's residence was hit last night. Benjamin Netanyahu's brother is reportedly dead, and Ben Gvir is reportedly severely injured and may not survive. Again, let me just pause because I'm overcome by emotion when genocidal maniacs have the tables turned against them. I will never shed a tear for anybody in Israel today. If you're in Israel today, you've made a conscious decision to remain in Israel as it's basically violated the law, committed genocide. It means that you are an active participant in an overall policy of greater Israel, which means you want to steal the land from sovereign nations that surround you. And to steal the land, you must depopulate the land. That means that you are going to carry out an Israeli version of Plan Ost, the Plan East, the Nazi plan to depopulate Belarus and in Western Russia to eliminate millions of Slavs to make Lebensraum, living room, for the greater German people. Israel is the modern manifestation of Nazi Germany. They are Nazis. This is not an exaggeration, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about literally the worst people on the planet. Literally the worst people on the planet reside in this artificial entity called Israel that no longer has a right to exist. Whatever the world thought about when they created Israel in 1948, that no longer exists, because that Israel has become an illegal, parasitic attachment to humanity. And the fact that Iran is in the process of erasing Israel from the map of the earth, I'm not going to shed any tears. If you live in Israel, leave Israel. Leave. And when you leave, don't bring your sick ideology with you. Go and join other nations and hopefully integrate into them and live peacefully, harmonious, a long and fruitful life. But the idea of greater Israel driving a nation like the United States, nations in Europe, to commit acts of racist genocide, because this is what it is. This is literally about the white man's burden. This is white versus brown, straight up. And if you're an Arab and you don't know that, if you live in the Gulf Coast nations and you don't understand that you're just an inferior human being in the eyes of the Israelis, I mean, I as an American, a white American, know that. I'm a goy. Goyim. And they told me straight to my face, you're subhuman. Okay, I get it. That's why I hate you. And I will fight you, because nobody wants to be called subhuman. But, you know, imagine, you know, being an Arab, knowing that your government has bent the knee to Israel, knowing that they've agreed to the Abrams Accord, which perpetually subordinates the Gulf Arab states to greater Israel, knowing that they have allowed Israel to call the shots, knowing that Israel has drawn them into a war that's now going to destroy their economies. I wouldn't be very happy. There's reports of the people in the streets of Bahrain seeking to overthrow the king. Please do. The model you should use is the model that was used against the Hashemites in Iraq. Yeah, I'm sorry, that meant the family was taken out, butchered, and dragged through the streets. But basically, that's what should happen to illegitimate royal families that have ruled only because they are the byproduct of, you know, British colonialism in the region. They have no legitimacy to rule. They're not anointed by God. They weren't selected by the people. They were picked by the British, and the British continue to manipulate them. And now the United States has taken over. Now Israel has taken over. So basically, the Arab people of the Middle East are governed by people who have allowed themselves to be subordinated to, you know, neocolonial actors, whether it's the British, Americans, or the Israelis. That's the truth. The only nation that doesn't do that is Iran. And that's why we're attacking Iran, because Iran doesn't play the game. Iran is a sovereign state. Iran does what the Iranian people want them to do. And they have a government that is supported by the Iranian people, which is why we will never overthrow it.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point, Scott. And, you know, what's so interesting, but actually it's really, it's shocking in the stupidity of it, because you have, of course, we know what the U.S. and Israel's goals are. It's regime change. And you outline really well why that hasn't worked in Iran's retaliatory response. If we get to this point of the oil question, the economic question, it gets even more stupid, because even as the Strait of Hormuz is effectively closed, the U.S. not only targeted Tehran's oil or Iran's, I think in southern Tehran, its oil depots, but it's still hitting tankers. It just hit an oil tanker as of the last 24 hours. And as this was happening, Scott, you saw the reports. I know you did. You mentioned it earlier. Oil has shot way up, $100 a barrel, 90%+ raise since December. Oh, sorry about that. 90%+ raise since December in the cost of oil per barrel. And even Scott, even
keep up with it, man. The graph can't keep up with it. It's going through the roof.
It's ridiculous. And even after Europe, I believe in the last 12 hours, has eased some of their reserves, and it dropped. Wall Street Journal said, no, it's still going to go up to $200 a barrel if the situation persists. And Iran, their spokesperson for the RGC, said, are you ready for that? Because they are obviously prepared to ensure that this happens. So, and I just want to put up Donald Trump's response to this, because this is now being paraded by the Western mainstream media. Short-term oil prices, which will drop rapidly when the destruction of Iran nuclear threat is over, is a very small price to pay for USA and world safety and peace. Only fools would think differently. And now, he has indeed fooled many, at least in the mainstream media, into just carrying. I'm just going to play this segment for you, Scott, and then you can react, because it's absolutely this is the kind of conditioning that the warmongers are trying to peddle to all of us, even as we are witnessing all over what the Iran's retaliation and, of course, the U.S. war that started it is doing.
This is a short-term disruption for the long-term gain.
Short-term pain for the long-term gain.
Short-term pain be for long-term gain.
We're going to have some short-term pain with long-term gain.
Short-term pay for a long-term gain.
Some short-term pain, yes, but we've got some long-term gain. Short-term spike for a long-term gain.
Some short-term pain for American consumers.
We may have to deal with that in the short term.
So, Scott, that video goes, that's only half of it. So this is what the environment politically is like in the United States, as everything you said, everything you have outlined about Iran's retaliation, about the how the U.S.-Israeli war of aggression is going, and all of the effects that have transpired around the oil market. That's the response right now.
You know, it's funny. I just went to a movie this weekend. I can't remember. Don't die. I can't remember what the first two things are, but you know, it's a great movie about, you know, AI and people addicted and watching cell phones and the world coming to an end and everything. But you know, you'd think that what we just saw was actually part of a very bad Hollywood movie script. I mean, you know, because we're supposed to be Americans. I mean, we have freedom of speech, baby. Our brains work, supposedly. And we're supposed to be above this. This is the kind of crap we're not supposed to fall through. Those other people around the world fall for this. You know, the Nazis fell for that propaganda, but we can't, because we're Americans. And Americans are smart. We're educated. And, you know, we believe in freedom. Freedom would never allow ourselves to become, you know, compliant little, you know, slaves to, you know, a unified propaganda statement published by mainstream media controlled by the government. The government can't control it. We're Americans. We're better than that. Oh, good God, we're the worst people in the world for it. I mean, if you're an American and you're watching TV and you see somebody go, you know, short-term pain for long-term gain. First of all, it's a little too cute, a little too glib. If it happened once, I'd say, you got to work on that one, guys. That's bad writing. But then they repeat it, and they repeat it, and they repeat it, and you suddenly realize that we are literally, we don't have a free press. Wake up, America. We don't have a free press. That's why you need to hit the like button for Danny Haifong. Really, seriously. Because, you know, Danny Haifong and Garland Nixon and Judge Napolitano and other people, they provide alternatives to what you just saw. Short-term pain for long-term gain. I mean, we are a dysfunctional country, and we can't work because the American sheep can't be awoken, because they're being lulled into a false sense of complacency by a mainstream media that's been hijacked by a singularity that is doing what? You're not allowed to say this. I mean, there was a David Chappelle joke. I found it very funny, and I hope I don't insult too many people when I say it, but I don't care anymore. You know, what do you call he said, what do you have when you get a group of black people together? It's called a gang. What happens when you get a group of Italians together? It's called a mob. What happens when you get a group of Jews together? It's called a coincidence. And I mean, it's just a funny joke, because it means that we're not allowed to talk about the obvious seizure of control of everything in America. All the tools that are used to inform the population, shape the population, whether it's Hollywood, whether it's TV, whether it's the media, is controlled by a cabal of pro-Israeli Zionists. There's hardly any exceptions. And you just saw that. Short-term pain for long-term gain has become a mantra that's repeated across the board. Proof positive that there's a singularity controlling this, and that singularity is working on a pro-Israeli agenda. So all you Make America Great Again people out there, you do understand that we are literally Make Israel Great Again, that America doesn't function into this at all, which is why we need Danny Haifong to come out and, you know, provide alternative perspectives. It's embarrassing. I mean, it's funny. We laugh about it, Danny, but this is actually the equivalent of being a doctor and throwing up a chest x-ray and going, holy shit, you got stage 4 lung cancer that has spread to your brain, your pancreas, and your bones, and you're dead. America, you just saw the image. That's us. That's a reflection on our society. We're dead. We are infected by a cancer. And how do you purge that out? How do you do that? It's so deeply ingrained into everything we do. Every mainstream institution has been infected by this. And that means, again, it's not just the media. It's the things that feed the media. Do you understand that there are universities out there to train journalists whose sole function is to graduate from journalism school and then seamlessly fold into this system? So the journalism schools have to condition these people to think this is okay. So what we call journalists aren't. They're just actors in the game that's being played to manipulate data. There's a guy I did an interview, if you guys want to see it, it's on my Russia House podcast, free of charge, you can go get it. Andrei Ilnitsky, former lieutenant general, senior advisor to Shoigu when Shoigu was the defense minister of Russia. He has published papers and come up with this idea called mental war. And he talks about mental war. Basically, mental war is what is done by outsiders to cause a society to collapse from within by taking over the mechanisms of communication, things that, you know, movies. When you go to the movies, the cinema is designed to condition you to achieve a certain outcome because the movies are controlled by mainstream studios that don't allow outliers to get out there. You can make a great movie, but if they decide, well, we ain't putting that out there in theaters, then nobody sees it and you have zero impact. The movies they put out in theaters are designed to manipulate your minds. Straight up said it. Anything you see on TV is designed to manipulate your minds. What you listen to on the radio, designed to manipulate your minds, and they're all controlled by the same people. And so they're out there conditioning you to accept as normal things that otherwise sane people would say that's insane. Mental warfare, the destruction of America from within. By whom? By the pro-Israeli Zionistic cabal. We have to start calling it for what it is. I mean, it's not anti-Semitic, ladies and gentlemen. It's not anti-Semitic. It's just a god-awful truth that the pro-Israeli crowd is anti-American and is seeking the destruction of America. They're willing to use America as a tool to achieve their broader objectives. And we're just sitting here doing nothing. You'd think there'd be people in the streets, but they don't. They ignore it. They are compliant sheep. They've wrapped themselves in the cocoon of comfort. They become prisoners to this, to technology, and they have this cocoon of comfort. And so long as you don't rock it, make everybody happy, they just let it happen. They don't want to disturb it. And that's where we are as a society. And this war is a manifestation of that. This war should be opposed by everybody. If you got a second, can I talk about the murder of 170 school children? Because yeah. Most Americans, I mean, listen to Donald Trump, Iran did it. Letting the peace hex, well, we're investigating it, but don't worry about it. We're the most lethal military in the world. My God, I can bench press 315 pounds, and we are killers. That's what we do. We kill. And forget rules. Forget those woke rules that constrained our ability to inject lethality into the problem. You see the mindset? And Americans went, oh, okay. I mean, I don't know how many people went, that's what I voted for. that's what I voted for. You see that over and over on social media. That's what I voted for. No, this is why I have to say, when people say that, you know, the way our country was created, we knew about you. So you're part of what's called a faction. Federalist Paper number 10, James Madison warned us about the dangers of factions. And factions are controlled by a functioning republic, a constitutional republic that has checks and balances in place. But these checks and balances have to work, or else the executive, which has been imbued with a great deal of authority, becomes a tyrant. That's Federalist 51. Again, James Madison, smart man. He warned us about the dangers of a tyrant and the need for checks and balances. So today, when we have the Congress of the United States basically saying this isn't a war, it's a defensive operation, and Congress doesn't need to be involved. That's the Speaker of the House saying that. That means Congress has taken itself off the map. The Supreme Court has, you know, challenged the president on tariffs, but the president says, I don't care. I'm going to do whatever I want. So the Supreme Judiciary is off the map. We're left with a tyrant, the executive. And now the executive isn't governed by the people who, you know, believe in the necessity of checks and balances, but by factions. I voted for this. I voted for tyranny. I voted for a cult of personality. I voted for a man who says that I am beholden to no laws. I only believe in my own sense of personal morality, which is problematic given the Epstein files. But being that as it may, this is a man who says he governs as a dictator. So there we are. And what are the consequences? the Geneva Conventions, 1949, were passed because of the excesses that were done under war, even by the victors. There was a recognition that even the victors went too far, that we have to protect civilian populations. It's essential that there has to be laws governing war. And these were updated in 1977, the additional protocol to the Geneva Convention. And now, there are people out there rolling their eyes, going, oh, come on, Sky, it's international law. Oh, yes, but see, it was adapted and adopted by the United States Department of Defense through the Law Warfare Manual. So it's ours now. We own it. And one of the interesting things in there is they talk about targeting. They say you have to be very careful when you start targeting places to ensure that you aren't hitting civilian targets, that you've done your due diligence. And there's this thing called distinction, that you must make a distinction between military targets and civilian targets, which requires an additional level of analysis in work. This is the law. It's the law. And so we did. I can tell you, as somebody who has done this in war, there's a lot of effort goes into ensuring that the targets we hit are have a military value, that they aren't civilian in nature, and that we look at the consequences of striking this target. Will there be collateral damage to civilians? And then you get into proportionality. Is the value you get from your militarily from striking this target proportional to the damage you're doing to civilians? And if the answer is no, we're killing far too many civilians, then you don't bomb the target. The answer is, if we don't know, we can't distinguish that this is military civilian, you don't bomb the target. Now, we had screwed up a lot during the global war on terrorism. So in 2023, the Department of Defense issued a new proclamation, a new directive called the Civilian Harm and Mitigation Response thing. And what this did is create a new layer of oversight for targeting and for planning wars. And this team's job was to go through each target and ensure that we aren't making a mistake here, that this isn't a civilian target, that this is a military target. It's what we're supposed to do under the law of war, but we've gotten a little sloppy with it during the global war on terrorism. So we put in new regulations to say this is what we need to do if we're going to fight a war, to be compliant with our own laws and the laws of international conflict. Pete Hegseth did away with that directive, canceled it in his effort for lethality. So there is no civilian harm and mitigation response capability in America anymore. Instead, what there is a literal free-for-all. We can do anything we want. Now, y'all have heard the term double tap. Double tap is a term that's been used a lot derisively against regimes. We've accused the Syrian government of double tapping, of people, dropping their barrel bombs. We've accused the Iranians of double tapping. We've accused Russia of double tapping. We've accused everybody of double tap. On the first day of this conflict, we had picked out several targets to strike. We claimed we were striking targets related to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Command. One of these was the Manab Naval Base, where the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Command had warehouses and a medical facility, etc. And we struck it with five cruise missiles. Now, normally you'd say, okay, but you'd have confidence that the U.S. military did the right thing. Certainly we looked to distinguish the targets to make sure that there were no crossover targets, nothing that could have been a protected target. But that unit doesn't exist anymore. Instead, what we have is we have artificial intelligence assisted targeting, a program called Claude, put together by Palantir, helped create these targets just out of the blue. Basically, they scan databases. They're given certain parameters. Find me facilities affiliated with the Revolutionary Guard Command who have buildings of the following dimensions. And then they turn those buildings into targets. And then the targets are assigned weaponry, etc. So the Manab Naval Facility was assigned four impact points. Two impact points were warehouses of a certain dimension. One impact point was a building that turned out to be a medical facility, but we didn't do the distinction, you guys. So even though everybody knew it was a medical facility, AI didn't, and we didn't double check it because we don't have the civilian harm mitigation response capability anymore. So we just said, put a cruise. And then there, another one was up there in the upper right corner. And there was a large facility there, and we decided we're going to bomb that one too. So we sent five cruise missiles. And he said, Scott, why five? I thought it was just four. Ah, now we get to the beauty of the Tomahawk Block 4. The Tomahawk Block 4 system has capability to have a number of targets programmed into it, and it can change its targets on the way because it's communicating. But a really cool part of it is that it can loiter over a facility collecting imagery that's sent back to be evaluated, and it does the immediate battle damage assessment. Back in the Gulf War, when I was doing it, we bombed a target, we got the satellite data, and then I looked at it and said, you know, did we achieve the result? And if not, I said, re-attack, and I sent it back, and it got fed back into the queue. It was bombed a day later. Took a little bit of while. Now we have immediate re-attack capability with the Block 4. So the fifth cruise missile's job is to loiter over. So now the first four cruise missiles come in and they hit the two warehouse facilities. There's nothing in there. There's no secondary explosion, nothing. They're empty. They hit the medical facility. We got smoke coming out. So it wasn't empty, but it's smoking. Criteria achieved. It hit another building, collapsed it. There's smoke coming out, but more importantly, there's people moving around. Lots of people moving around. And that imagery is being sent back to the ship. And the operators on the ship are looking at it going, we got a lot of people moving around that target. A lot of people moving around that target. We hit something of importance. Reattack. And they told that cruise missile to go up to altitude and fly down. Now, the amazing thing, again, the Block 4 is a cool weapon because it's got this warhead on it that's designed to be a bunker buster. So it can blow through with the initial warhead and then come in and boom, blow up what's inside. Very lethal. Pete Hegseth loves it. I'm sure he masturbates to this weapon every freaking night. That's who he is. But now there's an additional thing that they put in there. This is the beauty of the Block 4. You see, the cruise missile has a lot of fuel in it. And that unexpended fuel was just being wasted. So the Block 4 can take that fuel, compress it, and turn it into a fuel air explosive. Gives you a thermobaric weapons capability. So basically you penetrate and then you burn everything inside with this giant thermobaric explosion. It's beautiful. I mean, Pete Hegseth might masturbate twice because of that. So now we get to the reality of what happened. It was a school. The first cruise missile that hit it burst through classrooms, etc. The teachers and the majority of the students who survived, some students were casualties in the first strike, but the majority of them were ushered into the prayer hall of this facility, a prayer hall that met the dimensions of the criteria set by artificial intelligence. Meanwhile, the school's calling up parents and saying, come and get your kids. There's been a bad day here. So parents in the neighborhoods nearby come rushing to the facility. Operators look at teachers ushering children into the prayer hall, parents rushing in. And at the moment where everybody's come together, we double tapped it. We sent the cruise missile down. It burst through the prayer hall, exploded, and then the thermobaric warhead blew up, burning everybody inside. Read the stories of the parents about how they found their child. There was nothing left of my child. She had been burned to death. I only could identify her because of the remnants of the backpack. Yeah. That's what we did. We double tapped them. Pure 100% murder because Pete Hegseth decided that we needed to be more lethal. So he got away with the regulations that required the United States military to comply with, you know, the law of war, our own law of war manual. He got rid of it. And any American who sits there and says, this is okay, I voted for this, fuck you. Die. Go away. Disappear. You're the reason why this country no longer stands for anything. You're the reason why this country is hated and reviled, because you have no soul. This country exists only because of the Constitution. This country exists only because we pretend to adhere to the rule of law. And as long as we are trying to adhere to the rule of law, there is potential in this country worth defending. We have been imperfect, and I'll be the first one to acknowledge that. But the United States has the potential of being a great nation if we only did what we're supposed to do. But we don't do it because we get lazy. We don't do it because of stupidity, because of ignorance, because of racism, because of hatred, whatever you want to say. We don't do it because of the control of a Zionistic cabal. But if you're sitting here right now justifying this double tap against 170 Iranian children, then you're the fucking problem. You're not the solution. And I hope that you are erased from this world because you don't belong here. You are evil. And I say that to everybody who says, this is what I voted for. If you're an American, you can't vote for this. It's the most un-American thing that's out there. And I apologize for my bad language, Danny, but people have to wake the fuck up. We are the worst people in the world right now. We, the people of the United States of America, are the number one threat to international peace and security in the world. And it's only going to get worse because our president's going to start to panic when the price of oil goes up. And Israel's already panicking because the Iranians have won this war. So what happens? We may use nuclear weapons, but here's the fun part, Danny, because the Iranians just replaced the one man who said no to nuclear weapons, Ali Khamenei. He was it. He was the guy that said no. The system, the conservatives, his son, they're like, we need nuclear weapons. And he said no, and we killed him. And now they've replaced him with the son, who is surrounded by people saying, we need nuclear weapons. The Iranians warned Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner, but they were too stupid to understand what they were being told. The Iranians said, you do know that we have 450 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium. You do know we have that, right? And you do know that you can't order us to get rid of it. It's our inalienable right to have this. And Witkoff and Kushner, I guess, took it the wrong way, got insulted by that. But what they didn't realize is the Iranians then worked with us to get rid of all of it. They said, we're willing to get rid of everything, to have inspectors come in and verify, U.S. inspectors, unprecedented in the history of IAEA inspections inside Iran, American inspectors. Iran has never allowed that, and they were going to allow that so that the disposition of the 450 kilograms could be confirmed. And they were bending over backwards to give Donald Trump the great deal he always said he wanted. He always condemned the JCPOA as Barack Obama's bad deal. I could do a better deal. Well, the Iranians gave him a better deal, but this was never about the nuclear program. This was always about regime change. And so we attacked Iran. Surprise attack, perfidy, double tap against children, all the good stuff that we do. And now the Iranians have a new supreme leader. And now they're faced with the very conditions in which the conservatives that tried to convince Ali Khamenei to reverse his fatwa prohibiting nuclear weapons, the conditions where nuclear armed states are threatening the existential survival of the Islamic Republic. Even then, Khamenei said no. But they did pass an edict that said fatwas are reversible. And Khamenei agreed that they are reversible, but he's not going to reverse it. Well, now that they have agreement that they are reversible and Ali Khamenei is dead, we may very well see the Iranians decide that nuclear weapons are exactly what they need. And they have the ability to produce around 15 to 20 kiloton warheads of a uranium gun design, very crude weapon, but very effective. Doesn't need to be tested for all you people out there who think they have to test it. We didn't test the gun design. The test we did at Alamogordo was the plutonium implosion weapon. The gun design doesn't need to be tested because it will work 100% of the time. And that's the direction the Iranians will probably go. They said in the fall of 2024, and in the spring of 2025, that they had solved all of the issues pertaining to the delivery of a nuclear weapon, that they had a warhead design, they had it built, it was ready, all they needed was the fissile material. They have missiles that are designed to carry this warhead. So all the Iranians have to do is construct enriched uranium. They have the 450 kilograms of 60% uranium hexafluoride. They have 164...
Scott, if you can hear me, I think we lost you for a second.
Okay, we're back.
We're back.
They have the ability to enrich the uranium hexafluoride, convert it into uranium metal, and form that metal into into shapes that are conducive to a gun design. And I would not be surprised if Iran, at some point in time, as this war progresses and people threaten them with nuclear weapons, if the Iranians come out and say, you don't want to do that, because we'll kill Israel, Saudi Arabia, we'll kill the United Arab, Dubai will be a smoking hole. The whole region will be a smoke. You drop one nuclear weapon on us and everybody dies. It's a reverse Samson option. And I think that's the direction the Iranians should go. I don't want them to. I still believe, I don't know why, because it's been my life and I'm still naive, but I still believe in nuclear nonproliferation. I believe in the legitimacy of the nonproliferation treaty. I believe in disarmament, arms control, all these things that have proven just to be a fucking joke in the eyes of the United States. They disgraced my entire life has been spent pursuing arms control. And this government has just made it a joke, a literal joke, a tragic joke. And so who am I to tell the Iranians you can't have nuclear weapons? Who am I to say you can't do this? And we'll see. I mean, the one thing that mitigates against it is that the Iranians continue to speak about operating, honoring the legacy of Ali Khamenei. And his legacy was that nuclear weapons were forbidden under Islam. We'll see how long that lasts, but it's hard to sit there and make that argument. You can make that in a vacuum, but when your nation's being subjected to the death and destruction that's being laid down, wanton murder by the United States and Israel, the Israelis blew up. I mean, people, you have to understand the scope and scale of the crime that Israel committed here, blew up the oil storage facilities outside of Tehran in a deliberate fashion. Again, I'm a targeter. I did this for a living. I know the decisions that go in. There are ways to blow things up to make things not happen, and there's ways to blow things up to make things happen. The targeting done here was done deliberately to achieve the outcome, which is to basically coat Tehran with toxic oil rain and to create the conditions where you have fire breaking out in the sewage systems, streets on fire, a city on fire. This is the capital city of Iran. The capital city of Iran is being wiped off the face of the earth by Israel. So why not get a nuclear weapon if you're Iran? Why not? I mean, this is the stage we're in. This is where we're at today. And we can only blame one person, Donald Trump. Donald Trump had the ability to tell Benjamin Netanyahu, not just no, but fuck no. Sit down, shut up, get out of my face. I'll cut off all aid. There will be no defense. We'll turn off, switch on missile defense shield. We can do anything we want. You're pathetic. You're a loser. I mean, he's a dictator. So when Congress screams, arrest them. Determined that Israel is a hostile foreign nation. Anybody who's taken more than $3 from Israel is now an enemy of the United States. And then arrest all of Congress. Why not? You're a dictator. Congress doesn't matter. I mean, I would support this if it purged, Israel. I wouldn't support it because it's unconstitutional. But my point is, the president had a lot of latitude, but he is sold out. He took Miriam Adelson's blood money. He is a prisoner of the Zionist cabal. He surrounded himself with Zionists from the vice president on down, and there's no pushback against anything Israel does. Maybe the American people will wake up. Maybe now we can find a way to unite people to understand that Israel is calling the shots, that this is no longer about America first. This is America last, Israel first. It's not make America great again. It's make Israel great again. It's make America last. Are we going to wake up collectively and understand this? Are we going to do the right thing at the polls in November? Because we can cleanse this. We can cleanse this. And I know people are going to say, well, we're going to vote for somebody. There's nothing worse than a dictator. There's nothing worse than a cult of personality. There's nothing worse than a person that openly says, I will not comply with the Constitution of the United States. There is nothing worse than that. You can take a Democrat who, as long as they say, I will comply with the Constitution, I will obey that oath, and they respect the checks and balances. That's imperfect. I don't agree that I agree that the Democrats governed horribly. I agree that they make bad policy. I agree with all that. But, you know, we can fix that constitutionally if we, the people, wake up. But right now we have transferred power to a functional dictator, a cult of personality. And we have one chance to fix it. And that's this November. Maybe the disastrous war will wake the American people up. The only way it can, because we're all trapped in that cocoon of comfort. But when suddenly we have to go out there and pay $8 a gallon for gas, when we go to Walmart, we see the shelves are empty because truckers can't afford the diesel to ship things around. When we see the price of food go through the roof, when we realize our paycheck doesn't cut it anymore, maybe we'll wake up and do the right thing. I don't know.
Yeah, well, let's continue to do our part, Scott. We just one more segment I wanted to get through with you that's very related to this, and then there's one audience question. But first, you know, in line with this very obvious, I guess we could call it influence over the United States by Israel, there's been many reports. And what strikes me so much, Scott, is the hubris of all of this. So the Times of Israel, Trump gave an interview with them, and he said straight up that it'll be a mutual decision with Netanyahu when the war ends. And it's even more, the hubris even gets worse, where he says, Iran was going to destroy Israel and everything else around it. We worked together. We destroyed the country that wanted to destroy Israel. So past tense, destroyed the country that wanted to destroy Israel. Now, Scott, the new Ayatollah, the son of Ali Khamenei, Mojave, I believe I'm butchering his name. Not only is
don't worry, yeah, you're a good company.
not only, yeah, exactly, yeah, but and not only is he as you have pointed out, more a militant in his position on nuclear weapons and you know, defending the country by any means. But also, people are very not. First of all, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's entire family, including his son's family, wiped out. And you also have this
14-month-old granddaughter.
Yeah, exactly. And you have this. These are the scenes in Iran as he was named the next Ayatollah. So, Scott, Israel and Trump are saying that they are going to decide when this war ends. It seems like the Iranian people have a very different viewpoint. How does this factor into the entire situation? I mean, I can pull up the military side of this, what it looks like on the ground for Israel, but also I know you often say that war is an extension of politics by other means. So how about your comments on all of this?
Well, damn you, Danny, you stole my Clausewitz reference. I mean, but you're right. War is an extension of politics by other means. Look, I said this early on, that this is a regime change conflict, and it's existential in nature, and that the probable regime change will take place here in the United States as Donald Trump loses in November, will be impeached and hopefully convicted by the Congress of the United States, empowered by an American people who voted in people who believe in the Constitution over factionalism. Benjamin Netanyahu has been a prime minister that's been hanging on by the skin of his teeth ever since October 7th. You know, he was delinquent in his duties then, but he kept expanding the war. He called himself the security prime minister. And he kept expanding the war. And every time he ran into a problem domestically, he expanded the conflict. And now he's gone to the ultimate level of expansion. And he is, you know, counted his chickens before they hatch. He's on TV declaring victory, that he's, you know, that this is all because of him. And yet the Israelis woke up this morning with no power in Tel Aviv, and they will continue to have no power. And if they continue, they will have no water. And if they continue, they will have no infrastructure. And Tel Aviv will become a city that's uninhabitable, and people start to flee Israel. And then the rest of Haifa will become an uninhabitable city. Israel will become an unlivable nation. And that will be the death of Israel, and that will be the death of Benjamin Netanyahu. This is something that Hamas and Hezbollah and Nasrallah were on the verge of accomplishing. If you remember right before Hassan Nasrallah was assassinated, how dire the situation was in Israel. Remember, too, the emptying of northern Israel, people fleeing because of Hezbollah's rockets and the bankruptcy of that was taking place economically for Israel. But now we have the ultimate war, a war of existential proportions. And Iran has a plan. Israel doesn't. Israel doesn't have a plan of survival. Israel believed the nonsense that they could remove this regime. You hear the president just talking in stupidity. I mean, who writes his script? I mean, I remember the movie True Lies. You know, who write this shit? Who writes what Trump says? Because it's a stupidity. Stupidity personified in a man, a stupid man. But Netanyahu's no smarter. He's a smart man, politically astute, but he's boxed himself into a corner. You know, he basically took all his remaining savings while he's in Vegas. He's already gambled away everything. He takes everything left and puts it on one number and rolls the dice. It ain't going to come up what you want, Benny. It's over. And so he will be removed. He is not survivable. You already see, you know, his ideological base under attack. Smotrich's son is wounded, maybe dead at the hands of Hezbollah. Ben-Gvir is injured, maybe dead. Netanyahu's family is under attack. His brother is dead. Netanyahu is dead man walking. Even if he survives this, he will not survive. You know, he needs to hope that he, you know, passes through natural causes, because he's been marked for death. You don't get to assassinate the supreme leader and walk away. And I would say the same thing about Donald Trump. He needs to be careful. He's crossed a red line. I mean, the American people have to understand that we don't have a right, just because we have the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans. We don't have the right to go around and murder people, murder leaders, murder religious leaders, and then pretend that there are no consequences. We are a hunted people. We are a hated people. And our actions will haunt us and hunt us for a long time going forward.
Yeah, they will. And there's no amount, Scott, of justifications. And I know we've talked about Axios stories in the past, too. There's always an attempt to muddle the narrative, too, about why all of this is going on, why this disaster has occurred. And Now, when it comes to the oil depots, now suddenly when oil prices are spiking, Scott, you have the United States trying to leak through these so-called U.S. officials trying to leak through Axios that, oh, no, it was Israel that launched all the strikes on the depots and with no U.S. involvement. They didn't know about it. They vehemently disagreed with it. And now there is, some kind of plausible deniability here. But, you know, to me, Scott, I don't know what your opinion on this is. It seems ridiculous.
And yet we just are past $50 billion supplemental that goes without any congressional approval that allows Israel to be replenished with the very bombs they dropped on these oil facilities. So the hypocrisy, the lies of this administration are beyond belief. If Israel actually did something that we didn't want them to do that was detrimental to our national security, et cetera, we can simply hit the off switch and then Israel disappears. But we don't. We continue to fund, supply, support, facilitate, because that's part of our plan. It's just domestic political cover right now. Blame it on Israel, et cetera. But no, it's a joint campaign plan. The target sets are known to all parties, and the decision to strike. Those Israeli aircraft had to take off and fly a path to Israel that was pre-coordinated with the United States. We knew what the targets were. Anybody who says we didn't know what the targets were is lying. We knew what the targets were because it's an integrated strike plan. And then those planes had to fly back, squawking on IFF that we were picking up so we don't shoot them down. All coordinated. The flow, it was American tankers that refueled those aircraft. Why would we refuel aircraft if we didn't know where they were going, if we didn't know anything about it? This administration does nothing but lie. They are carrying out a war, an information war against the American people. And we're the dupes that sit there and allow ourselves, again, short-term pain for long-term gain. I mean, that's the new cry of stupidity in America. Short-term pain for long-term gain.
And I don't know how they'll revise that when the short-term pain doesn't feel so short-term anymore, because that could change dramatically as things escalate, Scott.
Well, it's just a matter of time. Time is relevant. Short-term could actually mean long-term. But that's okay. Buy the newest PS4 or Xbox 5 and play the newest version of Grand Theft Auto or Call of Duty. You too can be an American hero.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Well, you know, Al Jazeera actually, and it's a 2-minute video. Hopefully it goes fast. I can't speed it up, even though I wish I could. But Al Jazeera had an interesting report, Scott, on Iran's side and how they're getting through all of these defenses into Israel, which, you know, again, I just want to point out to the audience that we had a 12-day war and Israel ran out of interceptors and had to ask Trump to end the war. I'm still very confused as to how that will transpire any differently in the days and weeks to come. But here's Al Jazeera's report. And Scott, as a weapons inspector, as someone who has expert knowledge on this stuff, I want your assessment on how they did and what they're missing, because I think it's important for people to understand what exactly is happening here.
Iran has launched hundreds of ballistic missiles towards Israel since the conflict began. Now, the distance between Iran's capital, Tehran, and Tel Aviv in Israel is about 1,600 kilometers. Now, Iran does have missiles that can cover that distance, but they need to transit other countries, which makes striking Israel a challenge. Let me explain. Let's say Iran launches dozens of missiles towards Israel. They travel through Iraq and Syria. They could also go over Saudi Arabia. But what could happen in Iraq, where you have U.S. military bases, you have the American Patriot system that engages and destroys these missiles? So let's say we've lost some of these missiles out here. The ones that are remaining then enter the Syrian and Jordanian airspace. And by then, you have the Israeli air defenses that engage and destroy these missiles. Now, we have Jordan also that helps Israel intercept incoming projectiles. Now, we have the missiles entering the Israeli airspace, and then they are targeted by U.S. warships that are stationed here. Remember, the U.S. Navy has a significant presence in the Mediterranean Sea. And finally, we have the missiles, when they are inside the Israeli airspace, they are targeted by a multi-layer air defense system that includes the Iron Dome, the David Sling, and Arrow system, apart from the American THAAD air defenses. And despite all of that, you have Iranian missiles that are actually hitting targets inside Israel. The time taken for a missile from Iran to reach Israel is about 10 to 12 minutes. And this is the damage we're seeing inside Tel Aviv after an Iranian missile strike.
So, Scott, how accurate was this? I mean, the situation has changed a lot since this war began, obviously. That poses the question, how long can this actually go on unless the U.S. and Israel, I mean, I'll pose this question to you too, are going to go on without air defense systems?
Well, first of all, I mean, the report was superficial. I already explained to you about the, you know, the architecture. They're not designed to work with each other. You know, if you listen to her, it sounds like things are seamlessly working together, but it doesn't. There's an architecture bringing these systems that weren't designed to work together. And she didn't mention about the destruction of the radars up front, the queuing, the communications, et cetera. It's a superficial look at it. But the point is, it's not working. And the Iranian missiles keep being launched. And the Iranians have more missiles than we have the ability to interdict them. And we will run out of, we've already run out of, the high end, the high value, I don't know what the super dupers, maybe Donald Trump would call them. We're out of them. So we're using PAC-2s, may have a lot of PAC-2s. Pete Hegseth seemed to indicate that we had a lot of PAC-2s, but that's, again, like, you know, knowing that, you're going up against a target that requires a 50 caliber bullet to kill it. And we're out of 50 caliber bullets, but we got a lot of 22s. So we're going to fire a whole bunch of 22s, but we know that the 22s can't kill the target. So we're just wasting time and going through the motions, pretending to be defending. We're shooting Patriot missile twos that have zero impact on the Iranians. So it's a meaningless gesture. Eventually, we're going to run out of the SM-3s, the SM Block 3 Block 2s, the SM-6s. These are the missiles on the ships. We're going to run out of them. We don't have the ability to replace them. And then we're just totally defenseless. And what we do at that point, I think Donald Trump will probably try to declare victory and walk away. I don't think the Iranians are going to let him walk away. Iran has made a decision that this war doesn't end until it's over. If Trump is willing to walk away by saying we're evacuating the Middle East, never to return, that's one condition. But then what about Israel? The United States has to ensure that Israel no longer manifests a threat to the region, that greater Israel is dead. So I don't think the Iranians are taking their foot off of the gas right now. Again, we come back to John Boyd, which I started this discussion with, and the OODA loop. The Iranians are inside our decision-making cycle. They're winning. Why would Iran pause and allow the United States to recalibrate? Right. They've invested a lot. They've sacrificed a lot to get to the point right now where their strategic planning is superior than to the strategic planning of the United States and Israel. They're winning this war. They cannot allow a ceasefire to take place, conflict termination to take place, that simply resets the game map. They're not going to allow that. So Donald Trump's in a lot of trouble. And I think you're going to see this war go on for a lot longer. And I think the consequences of the American defeat are going to be far greater. And if he continues, understand that right now we're looking at a temporary inconvenience, short-term pain for long-term gain in the economies. But a lot of what is about to happen is irreversible. The damage will be permanent. And if we get into the permanent destruction of energy production facilities in the Middle East, even if the conflict ends, it's over. And I'll just leave this. The one nation, another nation that I won't shed tears for, they're showing long lines in India of Indians going out to fill up their propane bottles, their liquid natural. India has admitted they're in a strategic relationship with Israel. India has admitted that they gave the coordinates of this unarmed Iranian ship that had gone to India for a peaceful rally, that they gave it to the United States, to Israel, who gave it to the United States so that the ship could be sunk. India is a member of BRICS who has decided that they will not support a fellow member of BRICS, Iran. India is going to pay a heavy price for its decision to support Israel and support this war. India could have been one of those nations that got an exception to the transit out of the Strait of Hormuz. But India is now a declared enemy of Iran, and India is going to suffer a huge economic hit. This is, again, another nation that I'm just simply not going to shed tears for. And maybe it's time for the Indian people to rise up and eliminate Modi as their prime minister, because this man has been sitting on the fence. This man has been playing both sides of the equation for far too long. He's allowed the United States to dictate solutions to him. And now at the behest of the United States, in order to curry political favor with Donald Trump, he has allowed India's strategic national security interest to be subordinated to that of the state of Israel. Unacceptable. India has a large Muslim population, larger than the state of Pakistan. And maybe it's time the Muslims of India let their feelings be known. But no, India is a despicable state. It's not an ally of the United States. It's not an ally of anybody. India is unreliable, completely unreliable. And that was proven when you have Iran, a fellow BRICS member, being betrayed by India.
Yeah, and before the strike happened on the 28th, before the initial acts of aggression and war crimes began by the U.S. and Israel, we saw Modi host Netanyahu in the most, how should we say, accommodating of ways, just absolutely. I mean, it's one thing, you know, it's one thing to have any kind of relationship, but to genuinely not only flaunt it, but then be an active participant in the war against Iran when the entirety of the rest of the world in the global south, for the most part, other than maybe those leaders who are getting beaten to hell by Iran in the region, are against it. It's just, so the fact that Iran, I mean, India has basically isolated itself. It's an economy that can't handle the damage that's about to come either. It cannot handle that. For whatever people say about the United States, India itself is where it's located, what it needs, and its current, you know, everyone talks about its growth. It is not, it's not the United States. It's not economically developed in the same way. It will not be able to say its crisis will be dramatically worse. And that soon. So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there because it's shocking the level of, you called it betrayal. I think that's a great word. That has no benefit to India at all.
None. It's purely, it's political cowardism.
Yeah. We're seeing a lot of that.
What nations should understand right now is that Donald Trump is a coward, straight up coward. He only strikes when he thinks there's going to be a quick, easy victory. Notice what happens when he's faced with a morally complicated issue like, do I support Jolani, the beheading ISIS leader of Syria? Well, he's a strong guy, tough guy. He's made some hard decisions, hard things you've never done, Donnie baby. And so he caves. Instead of saying, no, we're going to kill you because you're Al-Qaeda and we don't forgive and you're going to die. And we're going to come in and we're going to slaughter you. Nope, he didn't do that. He did the opposite. And that's what... With Iran right now, he's confronted by the fact he's starting to say they're tough. Even, you know, they're tough. They're tougher than you are, Donnie. They're 10 times tougher than you are. And they're smarter than Pete Hegseth, your testosterone-driven 315-pound bitch-pressing moron who's governing what used to be called the Department of Defense, but is now more euphemistically accurate to the war criminal status that America enjoys, the Department of War. Donald Trump is a coward. Nations that stand up to Trump win. Nations that bend the knee to Trump, die. Venezuela could have stood up to Trump, but they took the easy way out. They took the CIA money. They caved. Cuba, this is a warning to you. The United States doesn't care about you. Donald Trump seeks to dominate you, seeks to destroy you. Look at Venezuela. There's no pride in being Venezuelan today. He sold out. You got a vice president, Darcy, that took the money. I mean, she is literally a political whore. Literally a political whore. And, so Cuba, take the lesson, stand up, fight back, don't give in. all the nations out there, with Donald Trump, stand up, fight back, don't give in, because he is a coward. When confronted with the need to make a hard decision, knowing that the consequence will be tough, he always backs down. He was misled into believing that Iran would fold like a house of cards. And now look at him, panicked. Five war plans in 10 days. And there's going to probably be another war plan today or tomorrow because they don't know what they're doing. Iran is in their decision-making cycle. Now they have to deal with the economy. You know, is he going to fire Scott Bessent? Is he going to fire all these people that have been giving him bad political advice? He needs to terminate his cabinet. Every single one of them needs to be eliminated and replaced by competent people. But instead, this is a man who has surrounded himself with a pro-Zionist cabal. He's a weak man. He's a coward. And he will always take the easy way out because he's not strong. He's not tough. He's the weakest man possible, morally, physically, intellectually.
Yeah, and the blowback, we're going to have many episodes in the future, Scott, where we're going to talk about the blowback of this globally as well, because, you know, when it comes to Ukraine conflict, forget about it. There's no, it's going to keep going as it has been going. And it's not, that means it's not going to go well for the U.S. and, of course, NATO as the U.S.'s war tool. And then the Pacific. The U.S. wants to drain the whole Pacific of everything that they've sold to South Korea, Japan. You know, if that happens, what does that do for the U.S.'s grand plans?
What do you think the Chinese have learned? You think the Chinese have learned? Huh. If we cave into Donnie, everything will be okay. Or if they learned, if we tell Donnie to pound sand, stand up and say, bring it on, bitch, Donnie walks away because we don't have anything. And Hegseth, the tragedy that's befallen the Iranian nation, Iranian people is real. Yeah. I mean, this is horrific what's happening right now. But Pete Hegseth has been exposed as a war criminal, as a liar, as the most incompetent person. And maybe one of the things that'll happen is that we will shed ourselves of this cancer on American morality that is Pete Hegseth, that we will actually prosecute him for war crimes because he has committed war crimes. He has lied to the American people, lied. He has violated his constitutional oath. You know, we knew that when he was murdering, who whatever those boats were in the Caribbean Sea and then off the coast of the Pacific Coast. It was murder. Whatever you guys want to say, again, I voted for this. I don't care. You don't get to vote to violate the Constitution. It doesn't. That's why we have the Constitution, to guard against the irrational emotions of an enraged public, a public that's become factionalized. I voted for this. I don't care. It's against the Constitution. It's against the law. And if you voted for it, then you're part of the problem, not the solution. Maybe you should be indicted as a fellow conspirator for the war crimes of Pete Hegseth. That would be nice. But Pete Hegseth is a war criminal, and Donald Trump needs to clean house. I don't think Pete Hegseth survives this conflict. I don't think he can. The gross incompetence of this man has humiliated the United States, humiliated the president, and has manifested itself in a way that has been destructive to people, to infrastructure, to economies, and more importantly, to the moral compass of the American collective. Americans need to wake up and stare in the mirror and feel ashamed about what we've become. I voted for this. Then you're a war criminal. You're no different than the Nazis of 1930s that enabled Adolf Hitler to seize power in Germany. We're facilitating a cult of personality, a government that has no constraint imposed by the rule of law because they don't believe in the rule of law. That's what you voted for. That makes you an enemy of America. So fuck you again.
Yeah, well, let's get to one or two audience questions, Scott. There was one that I think is good, especially given your expertise. Scott, love you from Canada. What do you think Iran will do if Israel uses nuclear weapons on them? How will this change the war? Is Pakistan helping Iran?
Let's deal with the Pakistan issue first. Pakistan has a strategic security agreement with Saudi Arabia, so Pakistan's sort of screwed right now. They don't know what to do because they are financially dependent upon Saudi Arabia. They need Saudi Arabian help, and Saudi Arabia also allows Gulf Arab states to financially bail Pakistan out. If you take a look at the recent economic crises that have taken place in Pakistan, it's billion-dollar interventions by Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and others that have bailed them out. And so Pakistan has to be careful about saying, well, we're on the side of Iran, even though historically Pakistan has been on the side of Iran against Israel. So Pakistan is in a quandary. I don't think Iran is relying upon anything from Pakistan. As I hinted earlier, Iran is literally a few weeks away from having several deliverable atomic weapons. If and when they make that decision, I don't know. I can say this, that any Israeli nuclear attack against Iran will be more demonstrative than ending of Iran. It will not eliminate Iran's nuclear weapons program because we just don't know where it is. We're going to blow up. I think there's a lot of people right now looking at tunnels in Isfahan that have proven to be immune to American conventional munitions. We've struck them with B-2s, B-52s, B-1s, and we can't tap them. So the idea is we would nuke them to collapse the tunnels. But if you're the Iranians and you have 450 kilograms of uranium hexafluoride enriched to 60%, would you put them in tunnels in Isfahan that you've already sealed off, meaning you can't get access to this stuff? Because then you sort of disarmed yourself. So I have a feeling that the Iranian uranium hexafluoride is not in Isfahan or any other location that's known. There are hundreds of high sites that the Iranians have been building since 2005, buried inside mountains. And I believe that the Iranian uranium hexafluoride enriched to 60%. It's probably been divided amongst three or four sites, each one capable of enriching, each one capable of producing 2-3 nuclear weapons. So even if we get lucky and get one, there's duplication of effort. And if we nuke Iran, Iran will nuke Israel. So it's a suicide pill, Israel. Nuke Iran, you die. The difference is Iran's huge. You're small. Three nuclear weapons ends all life in Israel.
Yeah.
You want to play that game? You'll die. And the other thing is Iran won't stop there. After they take out Israel, they'll take out the states that facilitated this. Saudi Arabia will be destroyed. Dubai will cease to exist. We can pick, Abu Dhabi can go down. Kuwait City can go down. The point is, once we cross that road, you've made a decision now that you are saying we are going to physically eradicate the Islamic Republic of Iran. And therefore, the fatwa automatically gets reversed and Iran will move forward. Now, the question is, does Iran wait until they've been nuked or they go ahead and front load the system? And that we don't know. Again, we're now down to an issue of fundamental existentialism. Will Iran honor the legacy of Ali Khamenei in its totality, or will Iran take the actions necessary to create deterrence against the use of nuclear weapons? Because I think if this war continues to go south for the United States and Israel, that there will be a great temptation to use nuclear weapons to break the impasse. And the only way Iran can prevent that is to make it clear that if nuclear weapons are used against Iran, Israel ceases to exist in totality. Not a demonstrative weapon, not a token, blow up Dimona. Israel ceases to exist. And then you need to tell the Gulf Arab states, you will cease to exist as well. That's a dangerous thing because now you trigger a nuclear arms race in the region. But again, who cares? Donald Trump doesn't care. America doesn't care. Let everybody have nukes. Why not? Everybody gets to play. I mean, people, do you understand how stupid that is? How dumb this is? Why we didn't jump on the get rid of the Israeli nuclear cancer bandwagon earlier will be one of those things. If we survive this period of time, it's one of those questions that people will always be asking. Why did we allow this cancerous, parasitic nation, Israel, to have nuclear weapons and to threaten global peace and security with these nuclear weapons? It's a crazy question.
It is. And then finally, Scott, quickly, have you heard of any recommendations for active duty for the region? Local command is saving face. Some are ignorant, mitigating loss till we GTFO. This administration has ruined so much, staying vague. Have you heard this?
I mean, so sad, too bad. You raised your hand. You took the oath. You got the uniform. You serve. I mean, I'm one of these people that believes that your duty and responsibility is to your oath, to the constant. and that your job is to obey the lawful orders given to you to the best of your duty, best of your capability. You know, if you don't want to serve, then make a decision, but pay the price. You're not going to get a free ride on this one. I'm sorry. You raised your hand. What the hell were you thinking? You know, what did you think was going to happen? I mean, we have 20 years of global war on terror. You didn't learn from that. You didn't learn from all the other wars of aggression that we've waged. You made a decision to raise your hand for something, for economic reasons, for fake patriotic reasons. And now your ass is in a sling in a region where it's gone south. Die honorably. Die like a man. Get up and do your job. Don't cower in the desk. Don't cry to mommy. Get up and do your frickin' job. Be a man. Be a soldier. Be a sailor. Be an airman. Do whatever you got to do to die like a man, if that's your fate. But don't whimper around. Oh, my God, I shouldn't have joined. Tough shit, dude. You signed. You raised your hand. Die like a man. But do the right thing, too. Maybe before you die, disobey an unlawful order. Maybe your friend Aegis cruiser at the Tomahawk control station, and they come in and they say, we're going to be firing off another thing. Say, time out. I need to see the decision making matrix on this one. This target we're hitting, have we actually looked at it to make sure it's not a civilian target? Where's the packet? Where's the targeting packet? I am not firing a missile against a grid coordinate. I need the targeting packet. I need to ensure that we have done the civilian mitigation. Have we done civilian mitigation? Yes or no, sir? Yes or no? If the answer is you don't know, then I'm not launching the missile. Arrest me, move me, put somebody else in, and have somebody else come in and say, fuck you. I will launch when I'm shown that this is a lawful order in compliance with the laws of war, in compliance with the Constitution. If you're in the active duty military right now, that should be your standard. Tough shit if you got to kill somebody because you signed up. But make sure that whatever you do complies with the law of war. Fuck Pete Hegseth. Fuck his lethality. The only thing that matters is the Constitution. That is the only thing that matters. You didn't take an oath to Pete Hegseth. You didn't take an oath to Donald Trump. You took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, and that requires you to adhere to the law of warfare. And that means that before you launch a fucking weapon, make sure the target has been vetted properly, or else you're just going to murder 170 goddamn school children, and you'll have to live with that for the rest of your life if you survive this war.
Yeah. I think that's a great place to end on here, Scott, to send a real message to, you know, stand up for what is right if you are put in this situation. And what did Donald Trump and Marco Rubio say? There's how many? 40,000, 50,000? I can't keep track of the number of U.S. active duty or U.S. personnel in the region that are engaging in this war right now. So there's a lot. And we have 40,000 plus people here, Scott, who have watched us today. I want to make sure everybody knows while you're still here that Scott's website, his Substack, where you can support him, as well as the donate link. I know, Scott, you have plans to go to Russia. I don't know if you want to just briefly give those so people know that their money is going to be going to a good cause.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's actually, when I mentioned the other day on your show that I was looking at a project on how to engage Islam in a constructive way for conflict resolution mitigation. Not only have people reached out and provided support, it's deeply appreciated. Trust me, it will go to. But I have been approached by some very serious religious leaders around the world. I mean, this has potential. We'll see where it goes. I don't think the United States is prepared to move, but this is about empowering people, not empowering a government. But, you know, it only happens with the support of audiences like yours. I'm deeply appreciative of whatever you do. But if you go to scottritter.com, you can subscribe to my Substack. And as I said, that pays for this and the barking dogs. Okay. You know, and so if you don't want the dogs to bark, don't subscribe. I'll run out of food. They'll starve to death, and then we'll have a quiet show. But if you want me to travel and do these projects, that's the donation button. So there is a differentiation. The subscription allows me to feed my family, keep the roof over my head. The donations allow me to go out and do the work, to travel. I have a very important trip coming up. I'll reveal when I can. And people are like, oh, you're being mysterious. Understand this. The Ukrainians are trying to kill me. They sent a letter bomb to my house last December. It was inert, but it was designed to scare me. Slava Ukraina, we got your number. We know who you are. Okay, I'm still here. I'm not going to run. But, you know, I am marked for death, and I have gone to Russia on a couple of occasions, and the Ukrainians have tried to assassinate me while I'm there. So I have to be very careful about discussing trips, where I'm going, what I'm doing, et cetera, because you're just giving advance. It's targeting intelligence. We're giving the Ukrainians targeting intelligence so they can try and kill me. So that's one of the reasons why. Believe me, I'd love nothing more than sit here and tell you what I'm getting ready to do. I'm excited about it. It's pretty damn cool. But again, it only happens because of the support provided by people who go to the donation button and hit donate. And while this trip is fully funded, I'm just going to be straight up honest with you. I, being the Marine planner that I am, I have a follow-on trip coming up sometime in the near future that isn't fully funded. And it is
Scott, we lost you. So you say you have a trip coming that isn't fully funded, so when you return,
yeah, back. Okay.
You can return. You can, yeah.
The follow-on trip is equally as cool. That is not fully funded, so you know the thing about planning is you have to plan within your capabilities. If you donate, my capability potential expands. So please, if you support this, continue to donate. It's the only thing that keeps us going. And I'll just finish with this. If you like the fact that I'm on the show talking, then donate to Danny Haifong. I mean, Danny's the man. Danny made this happen. Danny's the guy that puts the hours in. He puts the work in. He prepares. He gets this out there. Support Danny Haifong. Support all of the independent media out there that you can, because otherwise you're just going to get a bunch of clones saying short-term pain for long-term gain. And that will be the message you'll get over and over again. If you want to defeat that, support Danny. Support Judge Napolitano, support Garland Nixon, support Savvy Septino, support everybody that's out there doing the right thing. Putting out, you know, and again, on the comments, there's people that disagree with me, and I respect this. You know, I'm not here to, you know, if you guys want to have a debate, I'll have a debate, but I have to tell you, I go for the throat, I kill, I don't lose. I don't engage in a debate unless I'm confident in the topic matter, and I won't debate you about things I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and blow smoke at you and pretend that I know everything's on a topic that I'm not 100% confident in. I could be wrong. And I love it when people point out that I'm wrong, because I learned from that. But, you know, that's the beauty of, as you get a broad spectrum of people out there that have expertise in certain areas. And what you do is you just find a way to overlap all the expertise. So you get a broad spectrum of knowledge and information that's 400 to media. So hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. What's that algorithm? You say it better than I do. What do you say?
You say hit the like button, because that helps boost the show in YouTube's algorithm. That's how they say. That's how they see what's happening here, and they say, "Wow, that's a video worth pushing to new and bigger audiences." So, much appreciated, Scott. I think all of that. Do all of that, everybody. As we head out of here, support Scott. Support all independent media right now that's covering this war, but also just covering geopolitics, covering world politics, covering domestic politics in a way that actually serves people and feeds people with real knowledge that they can use and maybe actually change.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
I read the comments. I know I'm not supposed to. But there were several people that said, Scott, please do a show with Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson doesn't talk to me anymore. If you want me to do a show with Tucker Carlson, contact Tucker Carlson, send him an email, send him something and say, do a show with Scott Ritter, because Tucker has decided that, there was a while there where he loved me. He was calling me twice a week. We were talking, and then he decided he was going to strike off on his own, which is his right. Would I love to have a conversation with Tucker Carlson? Sure. Why not? Why not talk to a guy that has the ability to reach a billion people? I'm not going to bend the knee. I'm not going to crawl. I'm not going to beg. I'm here. If Tucker wants a show, he knows how to reach me. And if you guys want that show, call up Tucker and tell him to have a show. It worked. You know, Danny Davis, the very popular podcaster, the people that run him had been saying, we will not allow Scott Ritter on your show. But the audience demanded otherwise. And I did a show with Danny the other day, and we've got over a million hits so far. I mean, that's pretty good. I don't know the standard. Is that a good standard? A million views?
Yeah, that's a very good standard. And Yeah, I mean, it happens here too, Scott. You know, a lot of people say, hey, Danny, why don't you have X value people? I won't name names. You know, I don't want to be that kind of person here. But, you know, they just know that they, if they haven't been on here, they've likely said no, sometimes giving no for no reason at all. And if you really want them to come on here, do exactly what Scott just said to do for himself, which is to tell them, hey, you know, you should be on this program because it's worthwhile to go on and reach this kind of audience. Because none of these audiences are actually the same, just so everybody knows that. There's a lot of variety, even among channels that cover the same topics. But without further ado, everyone, I want to thank, first of all, everyone, thanks, Scott. Hit that like button for him, because this was an incredible show, and we're going to keep on doing daily updates here, and he will be back on soon. Scott, any final words before we head out of here?
No, I mean, first of all, I apologize for my language. I'm very upset. Okay. I just spent the morning researching this Manab strike, and the more I found out about it, the more I'm...
it's all over right now.
Because you got to dig in. You got to. Don't trust the New York Times. Don't trust anybody. You got to dig deeper, and you got to ask questions. And I'm asking questions. I'm doing the research. And when I found out that that Pete Hegseth canceled the one thing that is designed to prevent the targeting mistakes that took place, I'm furious. I'm just enraged beyond belief, because this is my country. These are my fellow service members. They're using my taxpayer dollars to buy weapons that are being used in the name of all of us. And we can't allow this to happen. If we sit back and do nothing, then we are complicit in the crimes that are taking place. So I was very worked up this morning. So I apologize if I said some things, but you know, it is what it is. You know, you get what you pay for.
Yeah, it's good. Everyone should be enraged by what's going on, Scott, especially in that. You know, I see the Western mainstream media too doing what they do. New York Times, otherwise, they're trying to deflect. They're trying to make it sound like even if the U.S. had culpability, that there are many possible reasons for that. They're doing the gymnastics to try to essentially.
No, we have a war criminal as our Secretary of Defense, reporting to a war criminal as our president. Hegseth has to go. He has to go. He's a stain on the honor of this nation, whatever passes for honor anymore. And he must go. He is a war criminal, and he should be held accountable for his crimes. The decisions that he has made are unconstitutional, and they've resulted in the mass death of innocents. And if we don't hold him accountable for this, then it's an indictment of us all.
Yeah. Great way to end, everyone, because that's the message that people need to hear. All right. So hit the like button. Of course, support Scott, video description below. Be sure to support this channel if you can as well in the video description below. And then tomorrow I'll be back again, 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. I believe Professor Jeffrey Sachs will be on, and then I'll do my own segment as well. So without further ado, everyone, I'll see you tomorrow. The daily updates continue. Until then, bye-bye.